Abby II, if you will, the name of honor given to the fifth cat in the Bell household. That's number five. And I don't know what you do. You know, this little guy showed up outside our window, and this cat never makes sound. I mean, it opens its mouth, but no meow comes out. Nothing audible. But boy, I'll tell you, the night he wanted to get into this house, he just screamed. And we went running back into the house to see if it was one of the other four. No. This is a new guy who had decided he wanted to live with us, and he was going to scream until we darn well came out and got him, which we did. So now we have five, and I, you know, and then a bird. Five cats and a bird. So I don't know what you do. I have no idea what you do. You can't. You know, I know we're a soft touch and all that. There's probably some sort of cat visible sign only out there that says suckers. I'm sure they marked us, marked the house somehow, like the old bums did, and you know, in the old days. A soft touch here, feline heaven located with an arrow pointing this way. I don't know. So we have five now, and that's the new Abby. Now, we also, of course, have a bird who has now matured into a mature whatever it is. We don't know, but it loves it in there. And if you let it out and fly around the room, it flies right back into its cage where it has toys and it plays, and it loves it in there. And lands on my wife's hair, and we have so many animals. I think Ramona says we've got barnyard babies. That's what we've got, all right. And, you know, animals are going to take a little bit of a piece of what we're going to do tonight. Again, just with a couple of notes, I've made available a receiver. Actually, Bob has made available a site where you can hear shortwave radio, and I think it's really, really cool. So I want to direct as many of you as I can. Now, only about 115 at a time can listen on the one site, the Pahrump receiver, but there are several other receivers there that can be tuned. Receivers in, I think, up near Salt Lake and Ogden and Dallas, Texas, and Pahrump, Nevada. And so several receivers at one site where you can listen to shortwave. It's really cool. It's called smeter.net. That's smeter.net. So take a cruise over. And by the way, on the front page of smeter.net this night is a high-resolution picture of my five-acre antenna farm. That antenna I've talked to you about so many times, that generates its own little boulder dam in a way. It generates quite a bit of electricity. And you can get a bit of a scale. It's very hard in a picture to depict really how massive something is, but believe me, it's massive. On the left, you'll see our guest house, and to the right, the blue and white house is the one we live in most of the time, but we've got a guest house there. So that's what you'll see, and that's on the front page of smeter.net. And while we're on the subject of ham radio, from Gloria, hey, Art, I heard that ham operators were not invited to help with the Hurricane Katrina catastrophe. Is this true? I know that in general, communications among rescuers were in disarray. And as a person who worked online to do what I can from afar to assist pet rescuers, it seems that everybody has been depending on high-tech cell phones, phone lines, and all that has let them down. I know the pet rescue community could sure use some ham communicators. It takes them hours to travel between rescue sites and temporary shelters, and communications is still difficult. And I'd like to hear what you have to say about this. I have a lot to say. There were initial reports that jamming was going on. Not true for the most part. Of course, there can always be some incidental things going on, but there was no massive jamming going on in New Orleans. There was massive lack of readiness. In fact, here from ABC News, after surviving Hurricane Katrina's initial blow, the radio communication system for the New Orleans police and fire departments dissolved. That's the radio, that's the word used by ABC. It dissolved as its radio towers lost their backup power generators in the ensuing flood. Some of the equipment could have been brought back up quickly, except technicians were blocked from entering the submerged city for 3 days by state troopers who were themselves struggling with an overwhelmed radio system from a different manufacturer. As a matter of fact, the only thing available was maybe a little bit of ham radio and a little bit of CB, but they would not let the ham operators in. Now, with regard to what people thought was jamming, we've been getting a series of sun flares. I hope this has been covered on Coast to Coast. Gigantic sun flares, an X-17 followed by a bevy of X flares that made communications past a certain time in the evening on HF virtually impossible for short, medium range distances. It was just impossible. And I'm sure some interpreted that as jamming. Indeed, it was not jamming, but just the ionosphere refusing to cooperate at a time of national emergency when, the ham operators were not let in. That hopefully has been resolved now. I trust that it has. But certainly in the early emergency hours, they were turned away, just as people trying to get out of New Orleans incredibly were turned away from entering other communities where they might have found at the very least, dry ground, if not water and food and such. In a moment, a word about the littlest ones, the smallest ones, other than human babies caught up in the disaster in New Orleans, and that, of course, would be the animals. God, the story about the animals. You're going to have to brace yourself for what I'm about to tell you. Well, all right, the following is from a blog, and you know, you've got to be very careful. Hello there. You got to be very careful about blogs because, they're like rumor mills. So initially I received this information from a blog. It says dogs are being shot or wounded and left to die in St. Bernard Parish, New Orleans. Please help. Urgent. Dogs being shot by officers in New Orleans, St. Bernard Parish. And I went, oh, no. And talked to some friends on ham radio, and we all got looking into this, and oh, yes, I'm sorry to say it's apparently true. Hopefully it's isolated, and this is going to be no comfort to those who have been evacuated, the evacuees from New Orleans now scattered all over the country. But it's so important. This is something that I feel needs to go to the court of public opinion. And so on the coasttocoastam.com website right now, you'll see a little headline on the front page that says Katrina's Strays, and then, unfortunately, a clickable item that says Video Report. And so what was only on a blog, I'm sorry to say, is true, and I warn you, that video is terribly graphic. They are, in fact, shooting dogs, wounded ones perhaps being run over. Oh God, I can't imagine being first of all evacuated and separated from my pet, in our case five pets. I wouldn't let it happen. I don't think I could leave. I don't think I could leave my pets. What about you, your dog, your cat, your bird, your whatever? Could you leave that animal? Well, maybe, you know, when the rubber hits the road, maybe you could. Maybe your life and the life of your children takes precedence and you could leave, but I don't know if I could do that. I don't think that I could. Perhaps until that moment came, I wouldn't know, but whatever the case may be, these people who did have to leave their pets, heartbroken, to imagine that this is what might be happening to them. And in some cases, I mean, these were friendly dogs wagging their tails, and they were getting shot. So I think that the reason the public has to know about this is to get it stopped. This can't go on. I know there's SPCA down there. There's various organizations trying to get the animals out. I've seen plenty of video. I'm sure you have, too. But in the meantime, go God, don't let this go on. one could understand, perhaps if they were in packs and becoming vicious, but boy, that isn't what I saw here, and you're welcome to judge for yourself. So, you be careful. You watch that video, but you be careful who sees it. Don't allow children to see that. Well, I think there's been plenty of dialogue among the, incidentally, the Atlantic right now, the Caribbean, is really churning them out. We've got a couple of hurricanes, tropical storms about to be hurricanes. One of them looks like it's headed into the Gulf, not necessarily with a north turn planned yet, but it's going to go by the Keys, where they now have hurricane warnings in the Florida Keys, and it will then proceed into the Gulf, and we'll have to see what happens then. That's too scary to even contemplate. There's going to be more of it. Our world is changing. Here's an interesting one from The Guardian in the UK. So much of this has to come from Great Britain. Headline, warming hits tipping point. Siberia feels heat. A frozen peat bog the size of France and Germany combined contains billions of tons of greenhouse gas, and for the first time since the Ice Age, it has begun to melt. A vast expanse of western Siberia is undergoing an unprecedented thaw that could dramatically increase the rate of global warming, according to scientists. Researchers who have recently returned from that region found an area of permafrost spanning a million square miles, the size of France and Germany combined, has started to melt for the first time since it formed 11,000 years ago. That's an interesting amount of time at the end of the last ice age. Now it melts. The area that covers the entire subarctic region of western Siberia is the world's largest frozen peat bog, and scientists fear that as it thaws, it might release billions of tons of methane, a greenhouse gas, get this, 20 times more potent than carbon dioxide, into the atmosphere. It is a scenario climate scientists have feared since first identifying tipping points. Those would be delicate thresholds where a slight rise in the Earth's temperature can cause a dramatic change in the environment that itself triggers a far greater increase in global temperatures. And this from the Independent, a record loss of sea ice in the Arctic this summer is convincing scientists that the Northern Hemisphere may have crossed the critical threshold beyond which the climate may never recover. Scientists fear that the Arctic has now entered an irreversible phase of warming, which will accelerate the loss of the polar sea ice and has helped to keep our climate stable now for thousands of years. Well, if that has kept it stable, imagine what we're looking at. So I think that Katrina and this other bevy of hurricanes now forming up in the Caribbean is just sort of a symptom of a much larger global event underway right now. Not to say it's man's hand, not to say it's not, or what it is or isn't. It's just that it is going on, which is what I've been pleading for years now, that I really don't care which it is, because really in the end doesn't matter, does it? It's happening, and we have to prepare to deal with it. And by the way, with regard to Katrina, if you can boil it down to a single, simple lesson, the whole Katrina disaster, to me, it is simple, relatively, complex as it was in detail. The real lesson was simple. It's you can only, when everything falls apart, civilization is, if it was ever proven, it was proven in this case. Civilization exists held by a very thin thread indeed, and when it breaks down, you can't depend on local government, nor state government, nor federal government, or anybody else. You can only depend on yourself. That's the great lesson of Katrina, that you can only depend on yourself to, so in other words, to whatever extent you can prepare for any sort of disaster like this, do it. Because when it gets down to crunch time, you're it. You are going to have to take care of your family. You are going to have to take charge of your own life in some way, the best way you can, because there will not be help. It's a hard, cruel thought, I know, but it's the truth. So if there's any lesson you take away from all of this, please take that one away, that you're going to have to depend on yourself, period. And if help comes, fine. But as likely as not, it won't. Here's another one. These are sort of little crumbs that I think, little hints that you put together for a larger picture from CNN.com. UN Antarctic zone hole nears record size. Antarctic ozone hole, that would be. From Geneva, the hole in the ozone layer above Antarctica has now grown to near record size this year, suggesting 20 years of pollution controls have thus far had little effect. That's according to the UN, the United Nations, on Friday. In a bulletin on the seasonal depletion of the ozone gas, which filters harmful ultraviolet radiation that can, of course, we know, cause skin cancer and cataracts, the UN's World Meteorological Organization, the WMO, said the hole would peak within a couple of weeks. It will probably not break any records, but it shows that ozone depletion is still going on and that the so-called ozone recovery has yet to be confirmed. So there you have it. The ozone, ladies and gentlemen, is still depleting despite the best efforts of man. We thought we had that one under control, but the UN is saying, oh, no, you don't. Few people objected. Now, here's another one that was almost blog stuff, but this actually does come from a news service. Few people objected when police began gathering firearms that they found in abandoned New Orleans homes to prevent them from falling into the hands of criminals. But one gun policy expert says confiscating guns from law-abiding citizens who remain in the city is increasing the danger posed by criminals. New Orleans Police Superintendent P. Edward Compass III explained September 9th that the impending mandatory evacuation of the city was truly mandatory this time, and that residents had to leave for their own safety. Individuals are at a risk of dying, he told the New York Times. There's nothing more important than the preservation of human life, but many residents whose neighborhoods were undamaged by either Hurricane Katrina or the flooding just don't want to leave. Most fear that looters will damage or destroy anything they can't steal, and some of those citizens, as you can imagine, have armed themselves. So it may well be that they're beginning to pick up some guns from houses they say that were abandoned. Well, abandoned really is the wrong word to use, isn't it? There was a mandatory evacuation. The NRA, as you might imagine, just is not happy at all. They said, in part, as was reported last week, in the wake of unspeakable crimes perpetrated by roving armed gangs and individuals, authorities in the New Orleans area seized legal firearms from lawful residents, effectively disarming the very citizenry they are sworn to protect. On Monday, NRA Executive Vice President Wayne LaPierre and NRA ILA Executive Director Chris Cox slammed New Orleans authorities for this incredible, their words, incredible action. What we've seen in Louisiana, the breakdown of law and order in the aftermath of disaster, is exactly the kind of situation where the Second Amendment was intended to allow citizens to protect themselves. That's a LaPierre quote. He said, for state, local, or federal government to disarm these good people in their own homes using the threat of imminent deadly force is unthinkable. The NRA will not stand by while guns are confiscated from law-abiding people who are just trying to defend themselves, said Cox. We're exploring every legal option available to protect the rights of the lawful people in New Orleans. It sounded kind of like a firecracker, he told the radio station there on a Friday. Within about 5 minutes, the carpet began to erupt. Employees, unsure of the cause of the mysterious burning smell, telephoned firefighters, and they in turn evacuated the whole building. There were several scorch marks on the carpet. We could hear a crackling noise, a bit like a whip, both inside and outside the building. So this guy, he's incredible. Firefighters cut electricity to the building, thinking the burns might have been caused by some kind of power surge or something. But no, Kluwer, after leaving the building, discovered he had scorched a piece of plastic on the roof of his own car, returned to seek help from the firefighters. Quote, we tested his clothes with a static electricity field meter and measured a current of 40,000 volts, voltage actually, which is one step shy of spontaneous combustion, a situation where his clothes would have simply self-ignited, said Barton. So there you have it. Back in a moment with you. Just one more quick note on the smeter.net site, and that is... That's repetitive, isn't it? I don't understand that at all. Shouldn't be doing that. At any rate, one quick note on the S-Meter side, and that is we tape for about 8 hours. We record, is the proper word, for about 8 hours when my friends and I are on at night, usually from about 8 at night to 4 in the morning. And then that is then twice repeated during the day. So if you go to the S-Meter.net site and you cannot get in, then have heart and try it later in the day or, you know, some other part of the day, and you'll simply hear what went on the night before. And it's pretty wild, uncensored, unscripted, and sometimes totally uncontrollable, but it's a lot of fun. All right, to the phones. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this is Wes. How are you tonight?
Quite well, sir.
Art, I was going to tell you a story about a couple of kids here in the mobile home park I live in just outside of Knoxville, Tennessee, that drove almost 2,000 miles and got turned around and sent back home by the National Guard.
Oh, yes.
And they had, I think it's pronounced Yaesu.
They had Yaesu radios with them.
Radios?
Yes. Uh-huh.
5,000-watt generator. Extra gas.
I know.
Had a complete mobile rig.
I know, sir. They were turned away. I know. It was out. It's just outrageous. I mean, they were. That is the one thing, of course, they were most suffering was the inability to communicate between shelters and so forth. And so to have turned away volunteers with radios and generators ready to do the job is a lot of unthinkable things happened during all of this.
Well, I get to thinking about your kitty. And my wife and I have just taken in our fourth, we call them dumpster kitties, in a mobile home park. It's like a breeding ground for cats because it's real easy for them to get under the skirting under these mobile homes.
Sure, I know.
And they often head down to these communal dumpsters to try to scrounge up a meal.
We have to do more for the little ones. You know, they are... It's our attitude. I know some people that treat animals like exchangeable little toys, and when they tire of them, they just dump them. It's unbelievable to me. I think, you know, that once we take in an animal, or for whatever reason, we're responsible for it. We are then that animal's guardian from now until whenever, and the way some people treat animals is just absolutely as disposable things. It's unbelievable to me. And again, I'll say this, I have always thought they had souls. When you look into an animal's eyes and you recognize that you see joy and you see depression, sometimes you see all kinds of different emotions. Jealousy, for example. I'm not sure what divides the animal kingdom from us other than the ability to talk, what we do here on the radio. That's about it. Every other possible emotion I see in animals. And so what is a measure of what has and does not have a soul? I see an awful lot of soul in these little guys and gals. What about you? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, sir. This is John. I'm calling from Cape Coral, Florida.
Welcome.
I just want to say, you know, yourself, Art Bell, and George Norrie, you guys do an outstanding job. I'm going to tell you. But getting back to the weapon issue in Louisiana there, where the authorities were going in and taking weapons from people's homes and this and that.
Yes.
I would just recommend to people, you know, I'm a retired Marine, and I do security now at night. And my friend Bill, he's a New York City cop, and he's down here in Florida with me also, and he does security. But as far, he agrees. He kind of goes on the line that the weapons should be collected, but I told him I got to disagree. You know, it's part of, like you said, our Second Amendment, the right to bear arms and protect ourselves. I would have to say that the people that, you know, if you're going to have a weapon, after seeing what happened there, what you're going to need to do is get some type of small carbine rifle, something that'll break down. You should have a pack. You should have MREs, a gas mask. Believe it or not, I have plans on getting my whole family NBC suits. I don't want to sound like, you know, I forget the word I'm looking for, but, you know, like I'm some kind of military fanatic or something that I'm worried about doomsday or something like that, but I'm going to be ready for anything. And Louisiana was a fine example of why we should be getting ready.
It was a precise example, and it was a precise example of exactly what I said, that you have only yourself to really depend on. And to whatever degree you can prepare, darn it, do it. And that means all the usual things, some potable water, a radio of some sort with batteries, flashlights, if possible, a generator, whatever you can muster up for an emergency situation. And they vary around the country, from earthquakes to tornadoes to hurricanes to man-made, man-orchestrated disasters. There's inevitably going to be one, and so if you take any lesson from New Orleans, take that one. Be as prepared as you're able, because you have only you to really depend on. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good evening, Art. This is Blair in Sedona, Arizona.
Yes, Blair.
2001, you mentioned about our sun no longer being pale yellow. You only mentioned it once, and it said it sort of turned white, white hot.
Not so much that I mentioned it, but we had a string of callers who began to observe that indeed the sun was not or didn't have as much yellow content in it as they could remember. Now, that could be due, I suppose, to a lot of things, but an awful lot of people did observe that it seemed whiter than it had been.
Well, just go out and look at the full moon now. It's sure a hell of a lot brighter than it was in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I mean, that's one thing a lot of people are noticing when they're out of the city, the full moons, they comment, you know, hey, look at the full moon, it's brighter. So we got some solar energy that's coming down. Wouldn't you think that this also adds a boost to whatever we decide we want to believe or focus on? It sort of gives us that extra solar boost for either good or bad.
Oh, gee, I don't know. I worry more that, if there has been a change in solar output, which is measured frequently. By the way, the satellite that measures that about a million miles out is having some difficulty right now as a result, I believe, of the latest large flares from the sun. And so they've got what they describe as a voltage problem. And so one of the sites where you would normally see the sun from a satellite out there, it's simply not available right now. First time caller line, you are on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Rob in Kansas City.
Yes, sir.
I've got a theory about your antenna producing electricity.
Oh.
Let me ask you, do you have any way of testing, measuring how much electricity it generates?
Oh, yes.
You do?
Oh, sure.
I would be curious to test it on a windy day as opposed to a calm day.
Well, I've done that. Believe me, I've done that. Windy days versus calm days, cloudy days versus clear blue sky. I've done all of that, sir, and it's there under any and all conditions. Now, when you have electric influence in the area, like storm clouds, there's a lot more there. But there is a minimum of about 300 volts there any old time you want.
See, my theory is that the particles in the air, when the wind blows across it, it actually generates static electricity.
Well, what is your theory about what puts the electricity there when there's no wind at all?
I didn't know if you had a way of testing it or not, but
it sounds like
you've done all the testing.
Oh, yeah. Well, not as much as I would like. Thank you very much. Not as much as I would like to do, but that which I have done is rather conclusive. It's there all the time. Cloudy day, clear day, windy day, calm day, doesn't matter. Now, there is more when you have clouds with electrical activity in them, obviously, in fact, dangerously more. But, of course, I've got that all grounded out for safety. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Is this Art?
Yes, it is.
Look, this is Jeff. I was one of the hams down there in the Louisiana area, just out of Baton Rouge, is where I live.
Yes, sir.
And one of the things that had happened there, it got reports that there was a number of stations that were actually physically, the antennas were removed by FEMA, and they were told to leave the area.
Well, I did hear a couple of reports, sir, of FEMA coming in and commandeering towers. In other words, taking the antenna that was on them off and putting FEMA antennas up. And every ham operator, I think, understands or should understand that in an emergency of that kind, the federal authorities can come in and commandeer your equipment. I think most of us understand that.
Yeah, that's standard procedure. I got 29 years working with the Motorola Group out of Baton Rouge. I got laid off about 3 years ago. I drive a truck now, so I listen to you quite often.
Yes, sir.
I'm quite familiar with the entire state system up and down the river with all the state and federal communication that's down there. So it's quite a bit of equipment down there. But you're right, in an emergency, there's priority that I understood about that.
Okay, and as do I, sir. So no argument there. Yes, any help that you can be in a situation of that kind. I certainly would not object to that. I would suggest they use the antennas that I have up there, perfectly suitable for emergency communications. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Yes, hi.
Yeah, I want to talk to Art about a psychic experience I had just past my grandmother died. And
well, I am Art.
Now,
CeCe, that's something you can't say on the air.
Oh, I will not. I promise you that.
Well, you don't understand. Apparently, you don't understand. You've been on the air since I said hello. You're on the air now, so.
Okay, all right. Well, let me get to my story then.
Please do.
My grandmother passed away about 5 years ago. Just after she passed away, I went to see a psychic. And she was a shaman. I mean, she was an old black lady. She worked for the probation department. She never had a job as a psychic. She just basically had the gift.
Mm-hmm.
And she was able to have people come in and on the side and just sort of make predictions. Well, for years and years, ever since I was growing up, I used to give my grandmother teddy bears for Christmas. Every Christmas, she'd get a teddy bear. I think you know where this is going. I sat down with this lady, and I was just grief-stricken. I sat down, and the first thing I did when I sat down, she said, "Don't say anything." That's how I knew she was sort of telling the truth. I said nothing to her, and she just started writing down on a piece of paper, just
mm-hmm.
started writing and writing. She had about a page and a half, and the first thing she started reading off from that piece of paper was, "Your grandmother thanks you for the teddy bear." Now, it goes on.
Okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think there's no question there are people with that gift. And there are a lot of fakes out there, a lot of charlatans, but there are people with the real gift.
Well, this gift goes on because about 3 years later, my mother passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat down with this lady, and my family is dead set Assembly of God Evangelist Christians. And it's like church for 6 hours on Sunday and so forth.
Yes.
And I've never been a religious man, but I've always been a spiritual man, if you know what I'm saying. So, I mean, I've always not necessarily fought my mother on this, but we sort of kept our respectful distances from that. And when she passed away, I went to see the psychic again. it just seems I see her when I'm grief-stricken, but she does help through grief. I mean, there's a way. When you go through grief, Art, I just believe that when you connect spiritually somehow, whether it takes a medium or whatever, I mean, that does help with grief. At least for me, it does.
I do. I agree with that. I think that mediums and people do help with grief, whether their information is really derived in the manner that they're suggesting it is or not. And again, I think they really are gifted people in this area, and then a lot of charlatans. And by the way, I hope you like the TV show Medium. I love it. I must say the awards did go quite well this year. Just about every show that we love seems to have been awarded, and that includes Medium. Congratulations, Patricia. Actually, I would say my favorite shows in order would be House and Medium and Boston Legal. And Lost, that's Ramona, she loves Lost, but I'm telling you right now, look for a show called House, if you haven't found it yet, and Medium, and Boston Legal, and of course Lost, if you so desire. They're all absolutely superlative shows, and they all walked away with awards, rightfully so. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Art Bell there.
Yeah, be me.
Oh, hi, Art. I can't believe I got through. I really can't. I'm calling about that. I really love the stories of your cats. I just love your cats. And I have a story, too. I have 21 cats.
You have 21 cats.
21 cats. And there's no way I would ever leave them if I had to leave. I would just stay and go down with them.
It's quite unthinkable, isn't it?
It is. And it all, of course, happened with taking in strays. You know, my two oldest are like 16, and then they go down from there. But
yes.
And then just recently, we find another one out there, and I thought it was a male. It had no claws. Now, I don't know where it came from, but he's really friendly, and it turned out I thought it was a she, and it's a he. And so, and we always say, no more, no more, no more. And
I know.
And just take another one in.
Well, it's really a problem. I mean, it's a very serious problem, as you obviously are well aware.
Mm-hmm.
You just, I mean, what can you do?
You can't, especially when you love them, and you can. They're not wild animals; they're, you know, tame animals. Like I have raccoons out there. I feed raccoons every night, and I go out. There's like 15 raccoons that come around. I give them dog food and what have you, and you feel sorry for them. There's one out there that has the poor guy. He's having trouble breathing, and his tongue is hanging out. And there's really nothing you can do about that. But I've had strays that I've had to take to the vet and have put to sleep that have been attacked by animals out there.
Yes.
Some wild dogs got a hold of a cat, and I had to take it in, and there's nothing you can do about it except, you know, give your heart out, your money out, and do what you can for them, or try to get them fixed, put them back out again, and, you know, in areas where people feed them. And
that's so important, getting them fixed.